guys, and welcome to this week's episode of the In The Hood podcast, brought to you by Playbox Technology UK. In this episode, we speak to Michael Crimp, the CEO at the IBC, or the International Broadcasting Convention. Michael has led the IBC through 10 rollercoaster years of change and technological advancement, arguably having just dealt with their most disruptive year yet, 2020. We'll be learning a bit more about how the IBC overcame the coronavirus pandemic and what the plans are for the convention and the organisation itself in 2021 and beyond. Hope you enjoy. So, welcome to the In The Hood podcast today, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
No, of course, thank you for coming on and appearing. So I think we'll just get straight into the questions then, if that's okay with you, Michael.
Yeah, of course, fire away.
Awesome. So, Michael, how did you actually get started in the broadcasting industry, and what was your background like?
Well, that was a long time ago now, back in the 80s, and I was a sales guy. My dad was a printer, and then I ended up working in publishing. And then I found my way onto a video magazine and ended up coming to, first thing I did actually was I went to IBC 1984 in Brighton, and my job was to sell ads in the magazines. That's how I got into it. And then after a while, after a few years of doing that, I got made redundant, and they gave me a reasonably decent little payoff at the time. And it was at the time when kind of desktop publishing had just started. So you could actually produce magazines quite simply on an Apple Mac. So me and a couple of guys bought an Apple Mac and we started our own publishing company. And that did okay for a while, till the internet came along and it kind of confused things a bit. And also, you know, I had a good few years of having an office in Soho and having fun in the broadcast business. But I'd kind of, you know, got a young family by that stage, so decided that I probably needed to grow up a bit. So I went to night school and I got myself an MBA and a consultancy qualification, and I started doing bits of consultancy. And I'd met some of the guys who were running IBC at the time, and they wanted someone to produce a daily newspaper and help produce a daily TV program for IBC. So they asked me to get involved doing that. So that's how I did that. And I did that for quite a few years, actually. And then eventually, as IBC was growing, they were looking for someone to work on a future strategy for them. And they asked me to do that. And that led to them offering me a CEO job. And I've been doing that for about 10 years now. So I guess, like most people listening to this, you know, the career path is completely accidental.
Yes. I mean, that's one thing we've learned doing these podcasts is that oftentimes it's you know, people just fall into these things and you think it's this grand planned strategy, but it's very rarely is, isn't it?
No, I can't. You follow the line of least resistance and most fun, I think. So
I like that. So that they obviously now that's led up to you now at the CEO role at IBC. So what were your initial impressions about the IBC when you first joined? I know that you said that you obviously attended the one in Brighton a little while back. And, you know, was there always a clear direction that you wanted to steer the convention in?
Well, I was quite, you know, pleased and flattered to be given the opportunity to talk to the industry about creating a strategy for it. IBC in those days, in big bold letters, was International Broadcasting with a big capital B, you know, convention. And really, it was about terrestrial broadcasting. It was an international event, but it was very much focused on, you know, everyone's got an aerial on their roof. It seemed to me that talking to people and doing the research that the industry was changing massively. And so to try and give it some focus, we thought, well, what are the things that are changing it? So the first thing was, you know, other delivery mechanisms. So there was cable, there was satellite, and then on top of that, we've seen mobile communications. So it was important that IBC embraced those things. And what we saw at the consumer end was screens getting bigger and better and cheaper all at the same time. So it became interesting for us to think what the implications of that were and to roll out different parts. So we did things like launch content everywhere, which originally was a mobile zone. We brought in our big screen, theatre. You know, even had in the original days something like an IPTV zone. And I guess what was sitting behind that was the essence of the strategy which we put together was to be agnostic about screens, because everyone was talking about a TV screen. And in those days, there was a very basic mobile screen, and then there was a computer screen that the internet couldn't do very much. And then there was a TV, which was sort of interactive, but really it was just receiving information, and then a huge cinema industry. So we thought, well, let's be agnostic about whether we're in broadcast or not, because actually all the skills and creativity in the industry are likely to be the place where everybody converges to make sense of this. So that was a very large part of the success and growth. And you can see that at IBC now. The you know, the IBC bit is more of a logo than International Broadcasting Convention. And our current tagline, which is empowering content everywhere, is a kind of summary of where we are in that strategy.
So, and I had to bring it up, Michael, but how have you guys been adapting to COVID-19? So obviously with stuff like the IBC podcast that started and the IBC showcase, the virtual events, you know, what have you guys been doing to adapt to COVID-19?
Well, yeah, I think like everyone else, we're struggling a little bit. We've not been able to kind of meet up. I know it's a big question you've asked. It's a strange place to start. But, you know, as a team, we've found that adapting to kind of Zoom calls and all the rest of it has worked. We were really actually quite well set up with on Teams beforehand. We're doing a lot of remote working. I think now in regards to lockdown, we all just want to get out and get back together. You know, I think the day the pub opens will be a big day for IBC, because we haven't seen each other for a long time. So when we went into lockdown, we weren't really sure what to expect. We're determined to kind of try and keep in pace with what the industry were looking for. And that ended in a cancellation of the event last year, which, you know, clearly if you can't hold a safe and valuable event, there's no point doing it. So we cancelled it there. What we did have going was we'd launched something called IBC 365, which is our online platform. And like you say, that has been developed with some podcasts and some video showcases and some things over the last year. And that's kind of kept us ticking over. And probably a bit more than that this year. I mean, you know, we're kind of doing okay with that proposition. They're quite well viewed. We're generating some sales leads. People are interested in the content, so it gives us a viewpoint. But you know, it's a added value to a live event as far as we're concerned. So we're doing what we can until we can get back face to face. You know, sometimes you don't know what you're missing until you can't have it. Lots of people used to say, what's the value of a big event? How would you measure ROI for that? And I used to say, well, if I knew how to do that, I'd probably be floating around the Caribbean in a yacht now rather than kind of, you know, sitting here, right? So I don't know, and nobody knows, but I do know if there was ever a time where we couldn't have a large event, then we'd find out. And we didn't have IBC, we didn't have NAB. Let's face it, we all miss it. We want it back, right? So our job's to try and make it as safe as it needs to be for us to go ahead. We are reliant on several factors. Main one, I think, will be kind of vaccine rollout in the EU this year, and the confidence of buyers in particular to want to come to the show. So it's been a tough and difficult year, but I'm not going to whinge about that, because that's been the same for everyone, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I've got to say, it's been great to see how you guys adapt, and it only leaves us with optimism about how it can carry on, basically, to see these conventions adapt and these trade shows adapt. It does leave you with optimism.
I think so, and right across the industry, I think the overriding feeling is camaraderie and resilience. And all the things that bring you closer together. And when you feel closer together, you want to get together.
100%. Yeah, completely agree. So kind of coming out of this year then, how do you think events, conferences and shows will emerge from this pandemic? you know, do you think they'll be purely virtual? Will there be a kind of hybrid mix, or will it just be in person again?
I think they'll be hybrid, but I don't think they'll be 50% physical and 50% digital. I think they'll be 100% physical and 100% digital. So if you were there, you'll get the benefit of both. If you're not able to attend, you'll feel like you've had some interaction, but I think you'll still feel that you're missing something out. But I mean, we obviously, from our point of view, the way that technology is now, we've been working hard to make sure that our hybrid offering, as we'll call it this year, has enough of flavour of the real show floor. We're planning to do some stuff live and very quick VOD turnaround. And if people look at that and are engaged in that, if they're an exhibitor, they will be able to receive the sales leads from that, because we're trying to connect it up to their kind of on-stand presence, so that if they feel like they want to engage with people who are online, they can do that too. So we see it as an additional thing.
Yeah.
We think the content part of it is really strong. I'm not sure that you can really replicate a physical experience. If someone could give me a virtual pint of beer that I'd enjoy, then they could prove their point. But yeah, I'd rather be there, you know, meeting people. But I do think we can enhance that and make it easier for people who are unable to get there by using digital. So digital becomes a new opportunity for us in addition to what we're doing. I don't think it's a substitute personally. Many might disagree. We shall find out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's more complementary. I think that's the best route forwards. I don't see it as being this, you know, complete industry changer. And instead of being at these shows, everyone's going to be sat in front of their computer screen for, you know, several hours a day.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree with you. And then, Michael, this is, you know, going off topic a little bit more, but, you know, can you envision the IBC show being anywhere but in Amsterdam?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I like Amsterdam. We've been there a long time, but my heart's in Amsterdam, but my head's wherever the customers need to be to have a successful event. The only thing I would say is I think that in our industry, the social part of it is huge. Back when I worked in the press, I was fortunate enough to talk to the IBC guys when they were considering how they might move out of the UK. And I know that that was an important factor and one of the reasons they chose Amsterdam, you know, not just for its connection of the hub and the venue, being able to enable IBC to grow, and the fact that everyone spoke English, but the fact that it was a very social city.
Yeah.
And I can't see IBC. I can see IBC going somewhere else if it needed to or had to, but I would say it would have to be somewhere pretty sociable. It'd have to be somewhere like, to just throw something out there, a Barcelona or something like that. I don't see it going to necessarily to a big capital somewhere. We like to take places over.
It's not just a case of throwing a dart at a map, is it? It's you've got so much to consider. Like I said, it's logistics, it's the social aspect and the environment as well.
And you know, we've sort of have a long-term relationship with the city of Amsterdam, and it's a bit like a long-term marriage. You have to work at it, but I think it works for the industry at the moment, and I'm sure they'd stand up and say. I did quite a bit of research on it for IBC a few years ago when they were thinking about whether they should look somewhere else, and to be honest, the data was quite divided and inconclusive. I think I'd summarize it in a kind of one-to-one conversations I had with people. Was like, some people like change, so they're like, oh, let's go somewhere different. And some people don't like change. Oh, I always have the same room and same restaurant every year, right? So it came down pretty much 50-50. So in that instance, there wasn't really any real reason to change. But if one emerged, then, you know, it's my job and my duty to do that. And of course, we you know, as I say to our friends at the Rye venue, we have to look at alternatives and generate alternatives in case the Rye burns down.
Yeah, that's very true. So a bit of a general question then, Michael. how instrumental are these trade shows to the broadcasting community? And I know it's been echoed over the last few months in just how much people are missing the interaction and stuff like that. I think we've truly realised just how instrumental they are. But you know, what is it about these shows that you think is instrumental to the broadcasting community?
I've covered certain aspects of it, which I really wouldn't underestimate the importance of it being social and being face-to-face, because business is built on trust, really. So you can do a lot of research on the internet, but if you're making really long-term big investments for you and your organisation, you probably want to go with a team of you and get to know the people, because these things are so complex, they're not going to be smooth, you know, the things will go wrong. So you need to have trust in the people to be able to sort those out. So I think that's important. I mean, I could quote you, you know, from my IABM research about the billions of trade that's done if you take the two big trade shows in the industry. But, you know, as someone who runs a business, and I'm sure lots of exhibitors would back me up. In fact, many have when I've, you know, spoke to them. IBC is a point in time, and you get your products ready for it, you get your marketing ready for it, you get your team all set up for it, you get your, it is a point in time where everything happens. And I think that's really important. You know, just to compare it with the digital world, there's a deadline every second, right? Because, you know, you can just say, well, I was going to do that today, but it can happen tomorrow. Well, if our show opens at 9 o'clock on Friday morning, that's when it opens. So the curtains go up and everyone needs to be, you know, doing their tap dance. So yeah. I think a very, very important from that point of view. And then, of course, there's just that human part that you can, that teams of people can go over and they can meet other teams, they can meet other companies, they can do all kinds of things. And that's where the value is.
No, I completely agree. And Michael, this is a question we ask at the end of every podcast. And in one word, what do you see as the future for the broadcasting and film industry?
It's difficult in one word, but I would say yes. Innovation.
Innovation.
And you give me, if I'm allowed a sentence,
you can explain it.
I've seen so many things come into the industry over the years, where in some industries they've been a problem. I mentioned desktop publishing and some technologies and, you know, what they've done for the newspaper industry, for example, which is basically sent it in a bit of a downward spiral. But we've managed to adapt and adopt, you know, OTT was meant to be a big threat. Well, it isn't anymore. It's just part of us, right? It's part of what we do. So I think the fact that we're welcoming, we don't sort of push technologies and people away as threats. We see them as an opportunity to innovate. Is something that I see in the industry. It's one of the reasons I'm kind of proud to be part of it, because people want to collaborate and solve those problems. And we've got, you know, I mentioned earlier about different technologies that have enabled the growth of IBC, you asked me, but really IBC is just reflecting the growth of the industry. And you look at 5G, for example, you look at AR and VR and some overlaps with the games market, that's just one area, right? So you look at applications of AI and you suddenly start to go, wow, there's really a lot of things and a lot of skill and positive creativity in this industry, which I have absolute faith in will mean that, you know, we'll continue to be at the forefront.
No, yeah, completely agree. And just to finish on then, Michael, were there any exciting projects in the pipeline with you or the IBC that you can talk to us about today?
Yeah, I think probably the thing that I've been working on hardest and haven't quite managed to crack yet is to try and create some kind of 5G environment within the RAI. Obviously, to do that, the conversations need to start at kind of Dutch government and ministry level, and then the RAI, and then the big operators, because I think 5G has got so many potential applications that it would be really good to do that. And I mentioned earlier about our big screen theatre, esports. We did an esports tournament recently. IBC's got a history of saying, well, if there's a new technology, let's not just demonstrate on the stands. Let's get some of the exhibitors together, find an area of the Rye or the city and do that. In fact, as part of our 2020 showcase last year, we had we did a live 5G broadcast from Amsterdam. It's the first time it ever been done. And so I think, you know, if I was going to pick out one opportunity, it's not just the 5G technology, but understanding the applications and the business models around that will be the next one of the next things we want to look at.
Yeah. It's crazy to see how far along 5G has come along in the last year, just in terms of obviously awareness, but just how far it's developing. And then how can people get in touch with you or the IBC to find out more about anything that you guys are up to?
You can email me, that'd be easiest. My email is mcrimp, so I spell my second name, C-R-I-M-P, at ibc.org. So there's no dot in the M between the M and the crimp, so it's a whole one word, mcrimp@ibc.org.
Awesome. So, Michael, thanks so much for coming on today and speaking with us. It's been really great and a great insight into what IBC is doing at the moment.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much.